Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Hello, my freaky darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlin, Gary, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Fridays are split between Crawling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. Join Babla and Aphasiana as they teach you the fine art of being part sinner, part saint. And Mondays are split between Victoria and Dan bringing you the hearts of LNP and opening up the Black Lace Diaries with Mr. M and Mistress Frost. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host, and I, Pam Ray, can't wait to get into and read your words. Hello, Pam.
Hello, Rex. What's up?
Not much. What's doing?
Oh, well, you know, me just sitting around listening to your super cool intro song, rocking out, you know, drinking my chamomile tea because I'm like such a party animal. And, you know, just looking forward to, you know, reading and commenting on poetry and hanging out with you and hopefully maybe another cool poet or two. So should be an awesome show.
Absolutely.
Yep. For sure. Yep, but it was, I did not go outside today. I opened the door to let the dogs out and told them to do their business as quick as possible. As obviously, it's still cold. That's not changing anytime soon. So. Oh, my goodness. All right, well, we got a good amount of rights to look at tonight. Shall we go ahead and get started?
Yep.
All right, well, our first few rights, like 8 or 9 or so, are going to be from the Twisted Tuesday contest, Vera Tua Conoscador, which is Let Your Truth Be Known. All right, which was a title you came up with, and that was really cool. I liked that. All right. And there you go. See, Robbie is a
first one.
What's that?
Up next, we haven't even got the first one.
Incoming what?
You said up next. I said we haven't even got to the first one.
Oh, all right. Well, that was such a brain fart moment. Jeez. Oh, well. All right. Up first, we have Enwino-Truthitis by Madel. And it goes like this. Empathetic, I've been told, is an asset. Maternally, star child, truthfully, panic sponge, in vino veritas, right? Decently relatable. Yeah, usually I can only spew one unpretentious story. After that, you get vomit, darling. So, yeah, realistic, they say. Monkey see here palpably, a physical husk. Egotistically, vapid visage. It makes sense, right? Shit. Honestly, I don't know how to relate to any one of you, so help. You're getting pulp, my friend, so yeah. In vino realisticalistic, I'm following a pattern here, honestly, mental mask, phonetically, English for fanatic. Does it fit right? Holy fuck, word Batman, I can't recall how to write myself and screw all of you, so damn it. You're getting, oh, whoa, hick. Hug me. So, yeah. Farin to my couplistic. I'm completely coherent here, right? Kind of love you. I'm okay. harmlessly, shamingly, you know I love, come here, you, right? Damn vertical sleep, fall out here, here, anywhere. Woo, hey, Seuss, you're pretty, you soft hair, so yeah, I need to beer toss. Just being apart, tell me when the meeting occurred in our boyhood, I replied. End poem.
Gravy pan. well, that's, I like the bite in the first, in the title itself. And wino truth at toss instead of in vino veritas in wine truth. This kind of hits on the nose of the wino offering up the truth. Yeah, nice play right to start with, not to mention the play inside, as well as the appearing notation to mental confusiality that walks through it, the marriage of the words to actually gives you that feeling with the in vino veritasialistic, kind of like supercalifragilistic, offering up something else, and then getting on. All right, getting a little open up. The mind is working well, and all of a sudden, the little bombs start. A holy F word, Batman, and then the little so. Train of thought, damn it, train of thought, you're getting, then the hiccup, again, me, that little bit of train of thought, then the into far into my cup, solistic, like that, and the harmonious shamingly, this walks along that line of starting out one way, but as the wine is poured internally, things open up, broaden the mind to the point where, I'm not really making a whole lot of sense, but that's okay. That kind of ponders the question. Is this written drunk and then edited sober, or written sober and edited drunk?
Yeah, I have to say that... Well, I really like what you had to say, and I have to agree, there's definitely bite in that first stanza. One thing is you know, I had known that this was a challenging read, so I wish I had gone back and practiced, because I knew I was going to give it to myself and give the next one coming up to you. And so I kind of wish I had practiced, but, you know, but the thing is, I gave this a bronze. It was definitely the top. Well, there was a lot of good writes in this particular contest. Now, this one I put in the top three. I gave it the bronze because I liked that she took a very, you know, like she took a classic Latin phrase and applied it to a very modern vibe within, you know, and I like the there's humor in this. There's bite and there's humor. And I like how, it's very relatable in the idea of, you know, having emotional breakdown or, you know, that guard that we usually have up that blocks the things that we shouldn't say. It just basically, like, goes down and there's a flood of words, you know, like, you know, oh, I love you. And I like how she, you know, makes – there's a lot of really clever wordplay in here, like – with the hiccup, as you said, and the, you know, in vino veritasistic, and, you know, putting the words together so you can almost read them as if they were being mumbled by a drunk. And I like that she brings Dr. Susan at the end, you know, ooh, hey, Seuss, you know, I don't know why that was dumb, but it has a really just, I don't know what the right word is, but, you know, you almost just feel like the mind has completely gone to a land of cats and hats and all that. So just very cool, very clever, and I liked where she went with her chosen prompt.
It's Sam I Am, and I like my green eggs and ham.
There you go. I remember I used to make green eggs and ham for my kids every year on Dr. Seuss's birthday, which if I remember is February 2nd. All right. And surrealness. Oh, what's that?
Where are we going now?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked, because now we're going
to Carpe Diem Thy Day
by Peter Solway. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Oh, Carpe Diem Thy Day by Peter Solway. Slippery fish of now in passage, Mama Earth, Papa Universe, fishing for a bite. Mosquito or shark, boats seizing their prey of day, cobra whispering hiss. Scare the tourists with covert tests, urgent results sailing early from Naples. Captain Perth firing, Mother Iceberg on board, door knock, cops, games end. No bonus, Nietzsche to do rounds again, seize the goddamn mountain, do the Jack and Jill, Punch and Judy, Timothy Spall narrating, forever on rewind, orbits the same planets remembering, seafood from Naples, up from the turquoise Aegean, God still posing, serpents wrestling, and poem.
Great read there, Rex.
That's a shorty from Peter. That's a real short.
It really is, especially compared to his last couple ones. Yeah.
Yep.
And let's see here. Now, this is interesting. I have to say that parts I'm particularly drawn to, you know, with his poetry, I want to dive into all of it. But I did think it interesting. Do the Jack and Jill, Punch and Judy, you know, like Punch and Judy, the puppets, obviously, you know, that were always like hitting each other in the head, and or that fighting couple and Jack and Jill. Like there's this whole idea of those acts of violence that are taken as play. I don't know who Timothy Spall is. Do you know who Timothy Spall is?
I will have to look that up. So,
yep, he's obviously a narrator. So, let's see. I
also
like
English actor and presenter. Let's see.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I like that he. Well, first of all, I like his title. That he, the play on, you know, Carpe Diem. Like, you know, he's got Carpe Diem, and then he goes instantly into the slippery fish of now passage, Mama Earth, Papa Universe, fishing for a bite. Mosquito or shark, both seizing their prey of a day, cobra whispering hiss. Now, I really like and find intriguing mosquito or shark, both seizing their prey of a day, because to me that says, you know, you may think of the shark as the real problem, but don't forget that the mosquito is just as big of a problem. The mosquito is just as much of a hunter, just as much of a killer. And so I think that works really well metaphorically, is oftentimes we miss the danger that, you know, we think of as just, you know, nothing that can be excused. I also like... Captain Perspiring, Mother Iceberg on door knock, cops, games end. I feel like that's the whole idea metaphorically of children being put in their place. Seafood from Naples, up from the turquoise Aegean, God still posing, serpent wrestling. I like that line, God still posing, serpent wrestling. To me, it really gives to me the idea of the the show that people put on in order to impress people with their status. And those are just some of the different thoughts that the particular lines give me. There really is just a real sense to me of posing within these lines. So just an excellent write and very well done. And looking forward to what you have to say, Rex. Ah, shit. Fuck. All right. Oops. Sorry. Didn't mean to swear so much. Okay. Let's go ahead and call Rex back. All right.
Yep.
Hello. Welcome back. Well, you missed the most fabulous comment I have ever made. Well, maybe you didn't miss too much of it. I don't know when you dropped, but sorry about that. I mean, you know, if I'm commenting on a poem, I'm looking at the poem. So until I stop commenting and say, okay, Rex, I'm looking forward to what you have to say, and there's silence, I don't even think to look in the studio.
Well, anyway, Timothy Spalling was the rat boy in one of the Harry Potter films.
Okay. Okay.
Remember the one that turned into a rat?
Yes.
Okay. That rat was him, amongst other things. All right. O carpe diem thy day. I got to say that's deliberate. Otherwise, it would be a carpe diem. So seize the fish each day. Seize the fish in your day, so to speak. Slippery fish of now and passage, Mama Earth, Pop Universe, fishing for a bite. Then a mosquito or shark, again, that bite, again with the cobra, the hiss. Scaring the tourist. It kind of hits on the notion of fear-mongering. One illusion after another to keep the plebes in place. So you got through the Jack and Jill, Punch and Judy. And the Timothy Spall narrating, that kind of hits me with the sort of the talking head offering up the same old drivel, because he hits on forever on rewind, orbits the same, planets remembering. Everything is still the same because they're uttering the same shit. And seafood from Naples up in the turquoise Aegean, kind of hits on that notion of God still posing. Those who deem themselves as gods now, and those serpents are the ones their spawn, the gods' spawn, so to speak. Come, take the apple. It's fresh and it's inviting.
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree with you is that the title was definitely done on purpose, especially with the references to the fish and fishing. And I like the how you mentioned, you know, like the temptation to come, you know, bite the apple. And so very cool comment there.
All right, what we got now?
All right, next up we have Murdering Your Madness by Julie Buck, and it goes like this. I won't point my finger at the obvious, but you're drunk again, you sorry ass. I won't fixate on the wine like a bloated river overflowing into your veins. I won't explore the reasons you drink. I get easily bored with the common man and his anxieties and cautious attempts ambling towards self-forgiveness. I won't embellish your addiction and suggest truth comes in bottles marked. Trust me, the fermented grape is your friend. I won't rescue your apathies and fill your head with lies of solid ground in your end. I won't involve myself in your own inhumane destruction. However, I will accept that murder in your madness is one simple way keep mind sane. End poem.
Well, there's a lot of truth in that last line. You sit there, you're sitting in the attic of one's alcoholism. There is a note to that which comes with it, and that is, hey, you want to kill yourself? That's just fine. Leave me out of the equation. I don't have to put up with your shit. And if you're not going to die easily, I'll take care of you myself, just so I can live an ease of thought life without the madness that you delve into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do. I have to agree that just have that feel, you know, of, you know what, do what you want to do, but I'm not getting involved. I'm not going to try to stop you. If you want to, you know, kill yourself by over drinking, if you want to, you know, continue on down this path, I'm not walking it with you. You know, as always, you know, even if it's not true, like it's written like in the point of view of a character, I always feel like Julie does a great job of bringing us into a reality of a moment, into the reality of a life, and that there's a very conversational tone. Even though it's not technically conversational because the other person isn't talking back, but the words are just something you could really hear somebody saying to someone that they've had enough of their drinking and they're not going to keep, you know, helping them. You know, I won't embellish your addiction and suggest truth comes in bottles, Mark. Trust me, the ferment of grapes is your friend. I won't rest your apathies and fill your head with lies of solid ground in your end. You know, I'm just very straightforward and very, like, raw and edgy in its tone. So definitely an excellent write.
All right. Onward.
All right. Up next we have The Days of Wine and Roses by Tomahawk. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
The Days of Wine and Roses. And what shall I drink to? A life bohemian, caution to the wind, counting the days as rose petals, every lovely bud a conquest of desire. Reposed in the vault of my persona, I danced the dance of the cad, never the same frail numquam fidelis. I sang the body eclectic, oh, but electric. Diverse, never perverse, to thee I sang in vino veritas, whatever thee I would chance to see. Wine and roses were the mainstay, vino et rosa the medium. I seized the day, the situation, the maiden. Would that I could expound upon my wisdom to inspire such reticent lovers the power and efficacy of wine, its inherent effect, and all of the oh-so-very secular fervor and panache that allowed me such tempered frivolity. In days of future past, I reigned the victor, a man of whom was counted upon and loved, amorous in aspect, opportunist, in actuality. The days of wine and roses took their due. I am, such that I am now, a vestigial Lothario, who loved not too wisely, but only too well. They say, Virtus cum mascantur, let your truth be known, and so my truth be known. Begs the question, what shall I drink to? To all the roses, all the beautiful women who made my day phase into exquisite night. Thick transit gloria, all glory is sleeping. However, no evening, no affair was for naught. I live life, a brash bohemian, but most loving. And in the end, I say to every rose of my life, I bowed in their reverence, for in my heart, I love them all. And on.
Wonderful read there, Rex. Well, I really like this one, obviously. I gave it the goal. He wrote two prompts, 1 and 3, In Vino Veritas and Carpe Diem. And, you know, I really liked how this came across as, you know, it was very nostalgic in looking back. I liked the nod towards Walt Whitman. I sang the body eclectic, oh, but electric, diverse, never perverse. There's a certain kind of celebration of the bohemian lifestyle of sensuality, and not just sensuality, you know, with a physical partner, though there's that too. There's kind of the whole idea of enjoying, you know, the wine, the fervor and panache, that. You know, there's that looking back on youth and how it's about, you know, that the overindulgence, and yet despite the overindulgence, there's kind of those things that we learn. You know, as relationships go past, as frivolities go past, as the joys of life go past and change to other joys or, you know, other lessons learned. I thought this had a wonderful classic style. In fact, it kind of reminded me of the style of Walt Whitman. And I know he also, there's another poet that wrote the poem that had the Days of Wine and Roses in, and I actually did a show on him, but I'm totally blanking out on the name right now. I like how at the end he asked the question, begs the question, what shall I drink to all the roses, all the beautiful women who make my days phase into exquisite nights, sick transit gloria, all glory is fleeting, however, no evening, no fair was for naught. I lived the life of brash bohemian, but most loving. You know, I really like how it, you know, this person, like, looks back and says, you know, I made mistakes, you know, and life is fleeting, but, you know, I lived it to the fullest. Just really a wonderful, emotive write and very well done.
Well said. The question, and what shall I drink to pose wife? Now, the thought with that is the ease with this comes as a almost a biographical tone, the sort of Giacomo Casanova might offer up as part of his memoir, so to speak, a life bohemian, caution to the wind, repose in the vault of my persona, dance with a cad, I sang the body eclectic, oh but electric. I like that thought to the Twilight Zone reference. Nicely dropped in. And then that was the whole upper half that allowed me such tempered frivolities to finish there. Then the second, in days of future past, I reigned the victor. Then he's lording on the thought of that which he is actually drinking to. And still begs the question, what should I drink to? And the answer is, to all the roses, all those beautiful women who made his days phased into exquisite nights. The glory might have been fleeting, but there was always another bud to be plucked coming up, and there is no thought to the deference as, oh, I'm sorry. No, you are but another rose that begged my attention, and my attention I gave. And the thought of offering up the fact that he loved them all, probably did. Although this might be a thought to the life of someone else that kind of hits on that sort of a Casanova itself.
I like that thought. I like how you mentioned that, like it's like maybe like a Casanova type memoir. So really cool there. Oh, and I'd like to welcome Robbie to the show. Welcome, Robbie. Glad
hey, Robbie. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
So far, so good.
I'd have my wine with the show, but it's a little too late for wine, so I just settled for green tea for now. I generally try not to have alcohol past 10 p.m. because then if I after 10 p.m. if I have alcohol, my dream state just goes crazy. So good to know one.
Oh yeah.
Feeding the beast of dreams.
Yeah, it's like I have to be particularly careful with that. My my beast of dream is a little too easily fed.
Oh God, man.
I didn't mean that in any weird way. It's just,
No. I get you. It's just that it opens up a realm in the mind of where the all of a sudden things get a little more hectic, a little more chaotic, and oh God, what did I walk into?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah. No, I totally get how what you mean. I have some of the weirdest dreams, so yeah, I totally get it. So.
All right, so where should we go?
I had it.
Oh, did you get to hear that by chance?
Yeah, I was going to say I had a chance to hear it, so I'm able to comment if you guys want me to.
Please.
Yeah. Very much this, to me, it personified the feeling of what wine is in the sense of how it releases you and just kind of, well, just what like we were talking about, you know, the state of mind that wine gives. And it kind of reminded me of Dionysius a little bit with, you know, the him being the personification of wine and song and revelry and that. And that's what I was going to say. I was just opening the new tab so I could look at the poem. Particular was that the poem, like this is very hard to do. It had a couple of phrases there that were in Latin. Nun quam fidelis in vino veritas, and there was vino et rosa remedium. And myself, when I've tried to use that, I find that it can be hard to do it without it sounding like it's being shoehorned in. When I was a younger writer and I tried using Latin terms or technical terms, I found that it sounded too shoehorned in, and it was just a lack of experience. And but the in this poem here, it sounds natural. It doesn't sound shoehorned in at all, and I particularly enjoyed that part of it because I know what a challenge that can be.
Excellent. Great comment there, Robbie. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what you got next?
All right. Up next we have I Am the Wind, You Cannot Hold Me Back by Pink Fairy 5. And it goes like this. I am the wind. You cannot hold me back. Rain cannot put a damper on me. I race to be seen. I twirl and whirl with joy. My life is the bomb. I am living my truth. Someone throws out words that mean nothing today. I am in full-blown play mood. You cannot stop me or even put me on pause. I will do and say and live how I want. Today is mine. The sun is shining and the birds are singing. I am in full-blown joy mood. I am the wind. You cannot hold me back. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And this thing's in Carpe Diem. All right, Robbie, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Well, it kind of reminded me of the Zen sort of feel or idea of seizing the day, but very much in a sort of a naturalistic way. I guess because it's based on the wind, and I was just thinking of somebody and talking about their windsurfing that they were doing, and there's a couple of nature images in here, like rain cannot put a damper on me, and I like the line, I'm living my truth. It can be a very powerful statement. In this poem, it's that idea that you found what the truth of your life is. It's, you know, that idea that everybody's got their own unique purpose and their own unique path in life. And when you're able to find out what that is and you grab onto it and you can fulfill it, it's just the best feeling ever, right? You know, like when you're partaking of your hobby or your passion or whatever it is, and you just know in your heart that that's where you're supposed to be and you're fulfilling it. And it's nice that this poem has a playful tone to it. It's very meaningful and empowering, but it has the playful tone at the same time, which really engages the reader, because sometimes when you read poems written about self-fulfillment and that, it can, if it's written incorrectly, well, I don't know if incorrectly is the word, but written in a different way, sometimes it can sound a little self-important or something like that, but that's not like this the case here at all. It's very organic, very natural, and it has, again, that sort of a lighthearted, naturalistic feel to it. So that really came along with me to enjoy the poem.
Oh, absolutely. This doesn't come across as self-aggrandizing. It's almost a free flow of thought that works itself nicely out, because it hits on the back end of this, hits on happiness. Nothing can touch me in the moment because I'm zoned perfectly right where I need to be. Nicely said, Diddy.
Yeah, Robbie, thank you very much.
All right, Pam, what you got?
Yeah, I really liked what Robbie had to say about, like, the joy of finding your purpose and how, you know, that there's a message to this, right, but it's also, you know, filled with, you know, like that kind of sense of joy. You know, the thing that, you know, like, I am the wind, you cannot hold me back, has a very defiant tone to it at first. And there is a defiance in this, but it's an enthusiastic and joyful defiance. It's not a defiance that's looking for a fight. It's simply saying, this is who I am, this is who I will always be, and it doesn't matter what you do or what you say. You know, I thought this was wonderful personification of the wind. And I really like the end line, I am the wind, you cannot hold me back, and how that circles back around to the same lines as the first one. So there's that sense of connection in a full circle of finality to it. But, you know, and then that line reminds us that the wind isn't something you can hold back. You know, it's not something you can necessarily grab. And so, you know, there's... you know, really a sense of confidence within this. Someone throws out words that mean nothing today. I am in full-blown play mood. I really, you know, honestly, that line, someone throws out words that mean nothing today, is something that we have to constantly remind ourselves of. Even if we're not in full-blown, you know, joy mood or full-blown play mood, like, we have to remember that when people are tossing words out that are meant to put us down, meant to bring us down, that they mean nothing, you know. So really just absolutely a delightful write and very well done.
Great. Excellent. Where are we going next?
All right. Up next we have the number 144 by Shamit Akalanka. And Robbie, since you're the number man, I'm going to have you give this a read.
I like that. The number 144. Only 72 more years to go. 144 times the time will jump and the dice will settle. If I had 140 more things to spend my money on, I would like to be a stinky Jew with his finances, but it concerns me somehow. I am not concerned at all. with the prospect that confronts each and every one of us here. Do you know the reason why we are so nonchalant about the passing of time? 140 sandcastles, 144 times the waves come hit, 144 times. I don't know. Somehow the tear will not freeze, as you like to think when we get there. When we get to that point, the only thing that's going to happen is our disappearing and nothing more. So I ask you once more, is there any reason to forget all this? You say such a that promises a happy life, but I challenge your presumptions with the simple number of 144. But you don't worry now is no direction. Sweet answers are heading. It is the whisper of finality that you are flirting with here. But I don't have to say beware and frighten you with monsters and images of hell, answers of emptiness, because you, I can already see it in your eyes. They are getting heavy, gathering tears, and the number 144 resounds. I have opened the curtain with the number 144.
Great read there, Robbie. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you?
Wow, I have to say, you know, of course, you know, early when I had read this poem, you know, back a couple of times, and of course my first thought was to go to number references such as, you know, in the Bible oftentimes there are repeated numbers, both in the Old and New Testament. Of course, I didn't retain any information. You know, there's also the art of numerology, which is like any of those things that I take with a grain of salt. But, you know, obviously, I mean, that being the title alone, the number 144, is important, as well as only 72 more years to go. You know, and I really thought this was an excellent write, first of all, because it really made me think, and I like poetry that makes me think. And I also like that it asks questions, like, you know, do we really, where was that? Do you know the reason why we are so nonchalant about the passing of time? You know, like, to me, there's really the sense of somebody who has a gift to share, a hope to share, and you know, is asking people, do you know, yeah, you know, like, why we don't, you know, care that time is passing, like this whole idea of there is more to look forward to. There's a real sense of spirituality. You know, as I've said before, I am horrible with math. I am horrible with numbers. I have this kind of brain shutdown thing when it comes to math. But I have an appreciation for the message in numbers, the power in numbers, and how, and I know that sounds kind of silly, but, you know, I feel like their numbers connect the universe. Numbers give us a message that we sometimes can't get in other ways. Flirting with here, but I don't have to say beware and frighten you with monsters and images of hell, answers of emptiness, because you, I can already see in your eyes, they are getting heavy, gathering tears. There's really this, becomes this very conversational tone at the end, not conversational, but really observational in the idea that they see that the message they've delivered to this person has made an impact. So I really thought it was an intriguing and beautiful write and very well done.
Great comment there, Pam. Thank you very much. All right. The number 144 and the number 72 are all multiples of 12. You multiply 12 by 6 to get 72. And you multiply 12 by 12 to get 144. So that kind of hits back on the thought of what hangs in the Bible itself as far as the number. It's supposed to be the 144 cubits to the what the New Jerusalem was supposed to be sized at. But it also hits on the thought of 12 apostles, 12 tribes of Israel, 144. There's other things that go along with it, but the back end of that is the thought of there is more to life than the ease of what you got hit on in here. What was it? Where was it? I am not concerned at all with the prospect that confronts each and every one of us here. Do you know the reason why we are so nonchalant about the passing of time? Because we don't, it's the thought of that which is coming. As you like to think, when we get to that point, the only thing that's going to happen is our disappearance and nothing more. So I ask you once more, is there any reason to forget all this? You say that promise is a happy life. And then it's the presumption because of the thought that comes back on the bottom end with this. It is the whisper of finality that you are flirting with here, but I don't have to say beware and frighten you with monsters and images of hell, answers of emptiness, because you, I can already see it in your eyes, they're getting heavy, gathering tears. Thought with the open the curtain is to pulling back that veil so you can actually see whether there is reality in this perception that you linger onto, or are you deceiving yourself in that there will be something after the time spent here, or is it to the point that you've strayed so far out of bounds that you've lost your way and you fear that coming death because of that which you've done here? A lot of questions. And Robbie, you read that well. What do you think?
Well, it reminded me of how time compounds upon itself, and it's like kind of that phenomena of the longer you live your life, the shorter it feels. And I know that there's like actually like a psychological reasoning and sort of a mathematical actually reasoning behind it, because you have more years behind you than ahead of you, and somehow that messes with your psyche so that time seems to go faster. The one thing that stuck out for me like a sore thumb, and maybe heard me pause on saying the line because I didn't feel comfortable saying it, but with the Jewish reference in there, the way it was personified, I was like, I really, for anybody that was listening, I didn't like saying that line, but I don't know that just stuck out for me like a sore thumb. I don't know if there's a artistic reason for it to be there, but that really had jarred me. But you know, everybody's got their expression. The punctuation was very free flowing, which on the one hand made it harder to read, but on the other hand, I think it's more when you read it in your own head than when you read it out loud that it works, that it's a flow. I think it's meant to be like a flow of time, kind of how like time keeps flowing and flowing and flowing. And again, like I think it's a format that can and does work, but more so when you're reading it in your own mind, and so you're not getting like actually physically tongue-tied with your own tongue reading it. So I found that to be a kind of a curious little phenomena in this poem.
Oh, well said. Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. Did we do you already? Yeah. What you got next?
What's that?
What you got next?
Up next, we have The Proud Father by W.P. McLeod 1, and it goes like this. Sparks from the campfire burned pinholes in his shirt. The crowd didn't notice in the dark, but he felt the tiny stings, feigning indifference to the red welt spreading like a rash. If his boy had not become a scout, he would be yachting on the lake and fine dining in the trendy French bistro. at the club, but he recalled the Latin proverb he had learned in eighth grade, per Augusta ad Augusta, and he wore the minor burns to his shirt and skin like battle scars, decorating a wounded soldier returning from the cauldron of war, waving a victory flag above his torn uniform and flesh. End poem.
Great read, Pam. I like this for the simplicity of the thought, the proud father itself, and the fact that, hey, if he hadn't bothered going through this with his son, the scout, then he would be whining and dining in a trendy French bistro at the club after his yachting. So he's got enough money to do what he wants. Yet for him, the thought of sitting around this campfire, getting those little pinprick burns on his skin and through his shirt, doesn't affect the thought of, wow, there is something a little bit more in life than the ease of that which is rich, so to speak. The little things are those that mean more than anything else he can hold up to, because he hits on the decorating a wounded soldier returning from the cauldron of war, waving a victory flag above his torn uniform flesh. There's that note to, hey, I'll probably save this bloody shirt just for the memory. And, Robbie, how about you?
It was a kind of a curious mix of Wordsworth, his idea of a spot in time, but then also, a reflection of moments in time that are stretched out, because it feels like they're thinking about the past, the present, and the future all a little bit at once, yet it still feels like a spot in time that they're thinking about it. And I looked, I scrolled down to see what per Augusta, ad Augusta meant. And it says, definition, through difficulties to honors. So, and when they had spoken of the life events that they were speaking on in this here, in the poem, it had matched up with that idea. They were speaking in this about what they've gone through and what's being on the other side. The minor burns in his shirt, through his shirt, and skin like battle scars, and you know, it ends up with a war waving a victory flag above his torn uniform and flesh. So you know, they've gone through the burns, the scars of war, but they've come out at the other side of it with a victory. And again, there's the punctuation here that is a little more. The sentences are a little longer. It's not quite as free-flowing as the other one, but it does offer a little bit, again, that feeling of flow in the poem. It feels more like a, almost like a short free verse. And I have a feeling that, I haven't seen all the poems in this contest, but I have a feeling that maybe more poems than the average contest would have this kind of format to it, just because it does offer that feeling of a flow, and that's very much what that carpe diem sort of feeling is, and the other phrases that people have been writing about in this contest.
Absolutely. It's that the length of the sentences kind of hints on that note of Yeah, Whitman, because Allen Ginsberg appreciated those longer lines to rack up a little bit of emphasis and a little bit more depth to the feeling in the moment. You're absolutely correct. Thank you, Robbie. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, I thought this was I like the way it captures a moment, you know, of that. You know, and I think as parents, we all have those moments where we make sacrifices for our kids, but we think about those things that we could have had, you know, instead. And I feel like throughout this, and especially towards the end, there's a duality. There's a something unspoken. Like, I feel like the torn uniform and flesh, the war waving a victory flag, represents the son growing up and becoming a soldier. Like, I feel like the whole idea of this rite is that we're focused. It's two things, or three things, actually. It's focused in the moment, as Robbie said, and you know, but also into the past. Like, the father's there with his son, thinking about what could have been if he had chosen, you know, not to have children. But then it's also, I believe, even though it doesn't directly say it, and the end lines focused on the future, at the idea of the son himself growing up to be a soldier. I think this is a wonderful, thought-provoking rite and very well done.
Cool. Might go with a rite of passage moment, too. The handing off of the torch from one generation to the next.
Oh, I like that thought, too.
All right, what we got next?
All right. Get back to Late Night Poets, and I will put the next poem up. And the next poem is Both Whistle and Uranium by Intimidus Rex. And guess who's going to read that? Intimidus Rex is.
I forgot about this one.
Okay, Rex.
Okay.
Your poem is up.
Both Whistle and Uranium. I found death between the sheets of your eyes. That Donnybrook, a drum roll beat, bleeding out in petechial hemorrhagics. Fevered notes, larvic and spasmed eruption, free-falling across the depths of a lush savanna, wild and feral. Roiful in that sunset smile, lipstick behind irises, burning in quantum flux. Galileo swung to Pavlov's dinner chimes, and you swished through a thurible scented smoke, arc welding that ozone purchase of air, leaving all the singe in your thunderclap. Where Schrodinger's tryst would have flambéed monkish poplars, stoic perturbations, viewing erotica's ashen voltaic. And poem. All right, Pam, since you dug this up from somewhere, I guess you've got to go first.
All right. Well, I wasn't completely to blame for this, so I wasn't unhappy to take it for sure. I was happy to take it. You didn't show up on Wednesday. You didn't show up on Friday. And I got told, hey, you can put this poem on your show if you want, since we know Rex will be there. And I said, good idea. I really, once again, the way you make your stanzas flow and spacing, absolutely just visually appealing. I like how you start with a line that grabs our attention. I found death between the sheets of your eyes. You know, there's some people, like, you can, even when there's an attraction, you can look into their eyes and see, you know, that kind of that darkness. The Donnybrook, a drumroll beat, bleeding out and petechial hemorrhages. And it has a real feel of knowing you're going to battle. I also really like lipstick behind irises burning in quantum flux. Quantum flux makes me think of the whole idea feeling like time is standing still in that moment of knowing that person. To singe in your thunderclap. That I like the mixing there, like the, you know, because you don't get singed by thunder. So it becomes, you know, like, to me, you know, thunderclap speaks of somebody's voice, like the whole idea of you know, how their voice affects you, whether it's positive or negative. And where Schrodinger's trice would flambade monkish, poplar, stoic. You always have such wonderful, clever use of phrasing and imagery, and I like that you chose to use Schrodinger's cat. You know, the question of is the cat, if we can't see it, you know, is the cat actually dead? You know, and so, you know, if I feel like there's this, well, this is one of those rites that feels simultaneously dark and sensual at the same time. Like this idea of trying to view a love that's trying to view something that's hidden or keeping something hidden so it isn't fully available for interpretation. Erotica's ashen voltaics. That really makes me think of a moment that is so both beautifully destructive and sensual at the same time. So just a really beautiful right here, Rex, and very well done.
Well, pretty good thought rolling through there. Thank you. And Robbie, how about you?
Well, each stanza was very much encapsulating of an idea in and of itself, and it felt like each one presented a very unique image of time being couched between sort of two spaces. I found death between the sheets of your eyes, and there are two parts where kind of curious to me because it reminded me of something else that is like different but the same, and it still worked. I found death between the sheets of your eyes, and it made me think of the nictitating membrane, where like fish and those kind of creatures have, like any creatures that sleep but they can't close their eyes, they have like
an extra membrane, yes, protection.
Yeah, to help protect themselves, like from the water and that, and then also arc welding that ozone purchase of air leaving all, and it made me think of cold welding in space. I don't know how many people know about it, but it's a phenomena where because of the physics, the way things work in space, when you have two metal plates come together, they instantly weld together. Just something about the way the particles and everything are in space, and I thought to myself, that's neat. It because that, even though that's not what was put in there at all, it reminded me of that, and it still works in my mind because with cold welding, it's like the two objects, like could be like two ideas, and the two ideas, you know, they come together instantly as soon as they meet each other, you know. And so even though that wasn't explicitly written into your poem, it still worked for me because of how it engendered the idea for me of two elements in a moment of time coming together and meeting together instantly, you know, to make a new memory, that sort of thing. So that was kind of pretty trippy for me to come across that. And I always enjoy that tremendously when something gets elicited for me that, even though it's completely tangential to that image, it's kind of parallel to it, and it still works for me. So I got that out of it, and I've got my device is starting to run out of juice, and so am I. So it's 1:30, it's 1:42 here, so I'm starting to wind down, so I think I'm going to have to call it a night.
Let me say this, thank you. And what you thought about that arc welding was a great thought, mm-hmm. because my idea was that kind of arc weld, the thought between Pavlov and Schrodinger on opposite ends of that equation as to mm-hmm. who and what she is. So you hit the note right on the head.
Oh, cool.
Thank you very much for coming on board for a while. We appreciate it.
You bet. I'll be continuing to listen to bits, just away from the chat there and winding down. So, yeah, thanks for having me on, as always. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Robbie.
You bet.
And
have
a good night,
Pam.
Robbie.
Bye-bye.
All right, where are we going next?
All right, up next we have Mind Map Marathons by Rich F. I probably should have put something else up, but I am going to have you read that, even though you just read yours, because I would just feel like hearing it in your voice.
All right, Mind Map Marathons by Rich F. All right. Put your hands into my head. Open up the roof into my world. Jump right in and take a look. Now my life, an open book. Victory flag unfurled. Run your final lap of honor fought for, honor lost. Hopes now crashed and dashed like so much trash. Jets and flotsam washed upon my seaweed shore. Run all night and run forevermore. I will close my mind to you. And you no longer run away to lock the downbeat dust sheet door, to disappear forevermore from view, to find my spaceship to the waiting stars, those shooting stars, oh, these mean streets, crashing guards. My primrose plane now grounded, no longer flying, soaring to the sky, prehistoric planet newly founded, cataclysmic prisons in the sky, rabbit white now plunging tumbles, rushing headlong blunders stumbled, race with Alice, through this wonderland. Energetic thought wave contemplations, motivating mindset information, with starting guns, synaptic paragons, ether running mind map marathon. And I will run, run, run away, for this day and evermore, run all night and crawl all day, until at last I wash up on your shore. And fun.
All right, Ben, what you got?
A great read there, Rex, and I'm sure it was pretty obvious by some of the references, but I would like to mention that we have started the right, Beating the Rights, from inspired by Jefferson Airplane. Now, Rich did miss the contest, but he was inspired to write. He was inspired by the song, the songs, Run Around, by Jefferson Airplane, and the line particularly, Stop Running Around in My Brain, and then also the song by the Breakaway Band, Jefferson Starship, Runaway. And so I was really glad he was inspired. I really felt like there was kind of a surrealism, almost a playfulness, a dark playfulness, that really fits with Jefferson Airplane and Jefferson Starship lines. Like, of course, the well-known song White Rabbit, he makes the reference to the, rushing headlong, blunder stumbled race with Alice through this wonderland. I thought also there was some really, as always, great alliteration and rhyme, and there was not just the end rhyme, but the inner rhyme too, like cataclysmic prisms, has a certain like flow and rhyme to it. I really liked this all the way through, and I thought particularly though I was drawn to that second stanza, run your final lap of honor fought for honor lost, hope now crashed and dashed and tossed like so many trash, get some flotsam washed upon my seaweed shore. Run all night and run forevermore. There's within those lines a really emotive sense of hopelessness, a sense of not, especially with the before that saying, victory flag unfurled, it almost makes you feel like an idea of a soldier coming home from a war and feeling like life isn't the same as it was before. And there's this kind of lack of direction, this lack of respect. Just really just a strong, thought-provoking write all the way through and very well done.
Nicely said. Yeah, did hit on most of the songs. I thought he hit on the White Rabbit as a touch, too, because of the language. Put your hand into my head, open up the roof into my world, jump right in and take a look. Now my life an open book, victory flag unfurled. And he ran with a couple of motifs of rhyme schemes that run through this. The first was kind of had that look to a limerick, but wasn't, but had that same five-line stanza and the setup for it. The second kind of had a nice flowing little almost a rap feel to it. And so did the third stanza. Then he got into a little bit more, again, with the ease of thought with the rhyming scheme, and then finished out with that five line to finish. It walks, it's a little abstract, but it does hit on that kind of thought of, you said a soldier, this kind of hits on maybe someone who's got a little bit of what they call it these days.
Schizophrenia type thing?
No, battle fatigue, shell shock, they've got a new word for these things. Yeah, PTSD. And the thought of, put your hands into my head, it kind of hits on that notion of sitting down with a shrink. That second stanza, run your final act of honor, fought for honor lost, hopes not crashed and dashed and tossed, like so much trash, jets not lost and washed, upon my seaweed shore, run all night forevermore. Kind of hits on that notion of opening up, but not being understood. And then then he walks into that third stanza, I will close my mind to you, and you no longer run away. Kind of hits on the note of fear, what's being revealed. Now the primrose plain now grounded, no longer flying, soaring to the sky. It's on prehistoric planets newly founded, cataclysmic prisms in the sky. Right, rabbit white now plunging, tumbles, rushing headlong, blunder, stumble, race of hours through this wonderland. And hits on that notion of opening up the new territory explored into. And then the energetic thought wave, that stands for itself. Is the pathways in the brain opening up once more, and then finish out the run. Run away is maybe running back to himself, the thought of the mind finally catching a break and hold on something else as opposed to maybe fear. That's about it.
Really great observation there, Rex. And the idea of talking to a psychiatrist in the poem, I think really fits well with the chosen prompt. So very cool. And up next we have Thanks for Nothing by Martha Gettle. And we have a sound cloud for that. So here we go.
Thanks for Nothing by Martha Gettle. You gave me the world and you took it back. You broke my heart and that's a fact. You said you loved me, but you only lied. The truest thing you ever told me was goodbye. Now I'm sitting here looking at the mess I made. When to you my heart I gave. You picked me up and you put me down. You left me feeling just like a clown. So thanks for nothing, that's all I've got to say. Thanks for the way you threw my love away. Thanks for leaving me here alone and sad and blue. Thanks for the love I never got from you. Thanks for the night you left me alone, crying and wishing you'd just come home. Thanks for the tears that always fill my eyes. Thanks for the pain in this endless goodbye. So thanks for nothing, that's all I've got to say. Thanks for the way you threw my love away. Thanks for leaving me alone and sad and blue. Thanks for the love I never got from you. Thanks for the night you told me we were through, and that you had found somebody new. Thanks for the heartaches that fill my day. Thanks for nothing is all to you I have to say.
Great song, Martha. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is greatly appreciated. All right, Pam. What thanks are you giving?
All right. Well, I thought this was just a wonderful emotive write on heartbreak. She obviously wrote to the prompt, thanks for nothing, and took it one literal, which is really nice because it has a very direct quality to it. Thanks for the night you left me alone, crying and wishing you come home. Thanks for the tears that always fill my eyes. Thanks for the pain in the endless goodbye. I really felt like the endless goodbye was one of those lines that kind of just grabs at your heart, that phrases, because it's the whole idea that the person is having trouble letting go. Like the relationship has ended, the other person has left them, but they just in their head keep saying goodbye over and over again. And it, to me, really touches on that idea of having trouble moving on. And, just really a heartfelt write, really nice rhyme and flow, especially in those choruses, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Well, it's got that nice bluesy note of a country western song, except for the losing the dog and having four flat tires on your pickup truck. Other than that, it's perfect. And it rings that way, too, because the thanks has that nice, strong tone of being twofold. It's both sarcastic and almost heaven-sent with its thoughts. So, well done, Martha.
Absolutely. All right. Up next, we have Thinking in Color by Chris Bond, and it goes like this. I think and dream in color. My eyes do not see black and white. They are too stark, violent contrast between light and dark, imagery softened by infusion of color. I dream and think in color, paint store between eyes and brain. Everything witnessed is given rainbow pastel shade. Textured feel without contact, and poem.
Great read there, Pam. Well, this kind of hits on that notion of the vividity of color while doing acid. I think and dream in color. The black and white are the starker references to both sides of that rainbow, the back end of one, where white is the base color that fills in with notes to everything else, and black is the total dark essence opposite, where nothing gets out alive. Like I said, they are too stark. And I like that violent contrast between light and dark. Now, with the thought of painting in color, so to speak, visually, there is that note to the pastel shades, because as you ramp up the volume of the color itself within each shade, you get a different shade, but still the same hue where you get your pastels from. So they put a lighter burst on that which you're looking at, as opposed to the stark contrast of, say, a deep red as opposed to a something that walks kind of down to the line of pinkish. The same thing with the heaviness of a royal purple down to a lavender shade. There's that note to actually offering up feel and contrast by giving it a particular different coloring so that your views are a myriad of color instead of just a singular color itself. All right. And how about you?
I like that, the whole idea of a myriad of views rather than a singular view. Yeah, he wrote to Prompt 9, which was the song line, "Orange, blue, red, and green are the colors of what I feel." And I thought he did a really great job with his chosen prompt and reflecting the idea. You know, I like how, every line in here is great, but that was particularly striking is violent contrast between light and dark. I feel like that represents the whole idea of that contrast of that good and evil that is within everyone. I also like this is put in the first person narrative, and the imagery of paint store between eyes and brain, because to me, when you say paint store between eyes and brain, and I think you kind of brought this up, Rex, is that it really says I don't just see in the basic colors, you know, the red and the blue, but various colors, you know, like anything that you could see, anything you can imagine, is dancing around in my brain, and it does have that kind of acid trip type feel to it, which I felt like worked really well with his chosen prompt. I also like his end line, textured feel without contact. Now, what that made me think of is like there's this fact that if you imagine yourself licking a surface, you can feel what that surface is like. If you stare at a pillow and imagine yourself licking it, your tongue feels it. A wall, you know, a dresser, a blanket, you know, whatever, you know. And so that's what that line made me think of. And so that line really drew into me the idea of senses used and envisioned and used in unexpected ways. So just a really strong brevity and very well done.
Nicely said. All right, where are we going now?
All right, up next. Well, the question is, did I grab a new one? No, I did not. All right, let me try this again. All right, doody doody doo. All right. And going to grab the next one. And all right, there we go. And there we go. And up next we have "Selling Your Mother for a Hershey Bar" by S. Sharp. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right, "Selling Your Mother for a Hershey Bar" by S. Sharp. Power is a dominatrix, her eyes are lit. Greenish-blue waves crashing on the shores of desire, where one sacrifices in eternity, honor, the self, for those things that anchor oneself to humanity. Moors left begging, handcuffed by greed and desire, as she puckers her lips for the kiss, full red lips. Bludgeon values for but a moment's pleasure, teasing passion for power for a price that no one on earth can obtain. Her eyes fluttering, dark mascara ensnares one in a vacuous desire for control, which is fleeting along with the mortal shell we carry with it. And poem.
All right, what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, as always, great lead there, Rex. S. Sharp wrote to the prompt, selling your mother for a Hershey bar. I really like how he starts out with power as a dominatrix, her eyes a lit greenish blue, waves crashing on the shores of desire, where one sacrifice is eternity, honor for self. To me, this really has the feeling, and that's the kind of the feeling that comes from the prompt, is that people will do anything to satisfy their own indulgences, but won't think of other people. As she puckered her lips for the kiss, full red lips bludgeon values for but a moment's pleasure, tease and passion for power for a price. There's a very political, like, undertone, but not just political, but like a social commentary undertone in that idea that as the kiss, both the Hershey bar and the kiss represent that brief moment of pleasure, that brief moment of satisfaction that we sell ourselves for. A decorous desire for control, which is fleeting, all along with the moral shell we carry with us. And the control that is fleeting, I think, is another, I mean, this is a great poem all the way through, but to me that makes another really strong point in the whole idea that we are not as much in control as we think we are. So just a really great write and very well done.
Well said. And you're absolutely right. This does hit on that note of giving in to one's own guilty pleasures while not giving a rat's ass about anything else or anyone. And it kind of hits on that note, hey, you might indulge yourself in such, but it is vacuous, it is short-lived, and it is as fleeting, because that moment of control that you offer up with that the dominatrix, so to speak, is gone shortly thereafter. And it is fleeting, along with the mortal shell we carry with us, that is the body itself. And you want to be kind of hits on that notion of be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it, and in the end, you get nothing.
Excellent comment there, Rex. I like how you mentioned that, the be careful what you wish for. And let's see what we got next. You are still on, right? Yes, you are. Okay, just making
yep.
sure. All right. And up next we have Deep Within Me by Mamya, and it goes like this. I feel you deep within me, your fingertips blotting my meninges, massage my brain, that Thai style, make it supple, make it flexible. I feel you deep within me, your footprints all over my spine, drive your heel deep in my vertebrae, my coccyx extends in ecstatic bliss. I feel you deep within me, your essence mingling with mine. I can't get enough of your breath upon my skin, upon heat. I feel you deep within me. No longer, though, no more, no more. End poem.
Great read. All right. And she took, I've had enough of your hands running around my brain. Well, that kind of puts a thought with it, because this kind of hits on a note of deep sensuality. Get the hands upon the brain. Yeah, get the hands busy on everything else. My caustic extends in ecstatic bliss. I feel you deep within me, your essence mingling with mine. I can't get enough of your breath upon my skin, heat upon heat. And the finishing out, I feel you deep within me, no longer though, no more, no more. There's that sort of memory, the feeling in the moment, yet understand they are no more, no more, whether it's through death or parting, one or the other. So nice touch to finish out with.
What you got?
Great observations there, Rex. Yeah, I like how, you know, this, she makes it very clear it's about somebody that there's this emotional, this psychological, or, you know, that they really get into your head. I like how it comes across as sensual, which I think, you know, to me is wonderful because the brain is a very sensual organ. It's certainly with the brain that we are able to express our sensuality. I really like drive your heel deep in my vertebrae, my coccyx extends in ecstatic bliss. I like how there's this, you know, the whole thing is, you know, that idea of getting a massage, having your vertebrae, your muscle, your bones, all manipulated by someone. And Mamia does a wonderful job of taking a darker tone, you know, like, I can't get enough, like in that last whole stanza, I can't get enough of your breath upon my skin, heat upon heat. There's such beautiful sensuality within that line, and even a couple, but the end line, no longer though, no more, no more. It's a turn, like you're almost not expecting it to go that, to go dark, to the realm of that this is like looking back, that this passion, this connection no longer exists. But with those last couple lines, she really takes us by the hand gently and says, now here is the sadness, here is the darkness. I thought this was a beautifully done right.
All right, where are we going there?
All right. Up next we have, oops, let me try this again. All right. All right. Got to grab the next one. All right. Let's see here. Okay. Up next we have Silence and the Bang by Poetic Creations. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Silence and the Bang, Poetic Creations. Even nothing can fill the hollow within. It stacks and it compounds, encasing the core in a sincere silence that feels like fire but tastes like lead. Maybe if I had musket balls for eyes, then I could see beyond this dark kiss, splashed across infinity mirrors, waiting to shatter from the tension of this lingering calm. After such a long duration comes an acceptance of death, of cold and silence, before a 12-gun salute, all hail shooting stars whose fiery glows are extinguished in the absence of a bang.
What do you got?
All right. Well, really strong emotive lines. I like the title. I like, maybe if I had musket balls for eyes, then I would see beyond this dark kiss splashed across infinity mirrors waiting to shatter from the tension of this lingering calm. I thought that was a wonderful way to describe the silence before the storm. And I like the if only, because I think there's many times in life that all of us have those, like, if only I could stop this, if only I could redirect it. It's definitely some wonderful, intriguing lines throughout and very well done.
Not just the silence before the storm, so to speak, it's that, that calm before all hell breaks loose. That deep compounded silence which reeks in the moment. There's so much tension within it that all of a sudden when everything does pop off, the world is on fire. And although it does hit on that note to a funeral, and all that is invoked around it, especially with military, because he hits on that thought of the 12-gun salute and the silence of in the moment where everybody is waiting for that to that tension and that silence to break, where the you've got the bagpipes playing and then the firing of guns as a salute. Nicely done.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Rex. All right. And up next we have Thanks for Nothing by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. How can one put into words the perpetual pain of a pulsating, pushy broad like me? I'm loud, often frantic, occasionally happy, rarely. I never do anything. This is what I've become or have chosen to be. I want to understand. I know I cry more than I should. All that miserable crying cannot be a sign of a healthy mind. I don't seek to hurt people, but hurt them I do. People hurt me too. Shit, I hurt myself. From lifetime friends to cyber peeps, from loving parents to now my son, I get banned. I question motives. I question the existence of unconditional love. I question what happens to having a fight and getting over it and moving on. Now I'm just made all gone, like a toddler who finished his cup of milk. It fucking freaks me out when I love someone. It is forever, period. A moment of bad behavior need not end the connection. Yet it does, and rejection is like a fever, and I burn and burn. My anger bounces back and forth from heartbreak to pissed off. No goddamn way do I want to say thanks for nothing. On contraire, all you motherfucking soulless, unforgiving bastards and whores can suck my dick and know that I do thank you for showing me how fortunate that despite your fucked up hatred, I can still feel all of you, and I can water the love even if with my own tears. What a cold-ass mind screw. End poem. Okay, well, I wasn't expecting that one line, but...
Sarcastic. Cold and unforgiving, even though with the heat expressed. Yes, the boil, all that that anger down to a little touch of, you can suck my dick. Fuck y'all. I do thank you because the memories linger longer, and I like the memories because they keep me warm at night.
Absolutely. Yeah. I did like the bite and the sarcasm in this one. I also like that there's such a raw honesty in the idea of, you know, the idea of keeping breaking relationships and wondering about yourself and wondering about your own mind. But there's also that idea of, you know, like, why can't people, you know, like it used to, how it used to be in your kid, you fought with your best friend and eventually you were talking again. You fought it out. You said your piece and you got it over with. And there's that kind of idea of looking back and saying, you know, why can't things be like that? She does really good to me at capitalizing the right words, you know, in order to emphasize them. I really like, a moment of bad behavior need not end the connection, yet it does, and rejection is like a fever, and I burn and burn. You know, that intensity of how rejection just, affects you. And so just a powerful write and very well done.
What we got next?
All right. up next, I have to say I'm really enjoying and appreciating these rites inspired by the song lines. And up next we have Breadcrumbs to Limbo by Duncan Ross Bell. And Rex, go ahead, give that a read.
Breadcrumbs to Limbo by Duncan Ross Bell. How much longer will I feel the blunder? The thunder knows my name. I am the ink you're reading. Touch barely tingle, pulse and fits where the shattered sits. Off with the head, no food for the gallows. Pray to the dead, no breath in the shallows. Ghost on a chair, chasing last air. I am the wind you're needing. Whistling handshakes, a slick way to get ahead. No assist without a goal. Without digging, there is no hole. Cut bleeds the color of fate. Bitterness, the scar of hate. Walk away from the path that's set. Watch Romeo kill Juliet. Well, what you got?
Oh, first of all, really, like, really great rhyme and flow. He's always got some really wonderful hard-hitting lines, and I, you know, have to start at that end line, watch Romeo kill Juliet. And you know, they died together, but here it feels like an even darker twist. Like, it feels like, you know, by watching Romeo kill Juliet, that she's an unwilling participant, and it's the invitation to watch violence. I also like the off with the head was really clever because it obviously represents, you know, the queen in Alice in Wonderland, which references the song White Rabbit. So very cool there. How much longer will I feel the blunder? You know, as I always say, I like questions in poetry. They make us think along with the poet. And, you know, and I like that those opening lines start out with the idea of how long do I have to pay for my sins? And ghost on a chair chasing last air, I am the wind you're needing, glistening handshake, slick way to get ahead. I feel like that's the whole idea, a slick way to get ahead of greasing palms, of the idea of the rich greasing palms to get away with things. And so I just really thought this was a powerful rite and very well done.
Nicely said. Kind of hits on that notion of being eradicated. Off with the head, no food for the gallows. Pray to the dead, no breath in the shallows. Ghost on a chair, chasing last air. And I am the wind you're needing. Glistening handshakes, a slick way to get ahead. No assist without a goal. Without digging, there is no hole. Hey, you wither away in the moment. You don't even have to worry about the hole. It kind of offers up that figurative sort of killing someone by just making sure they're erased from that which is notable. And that last stanza hits on that notion that if you're waiting around for the hammer to drop, why not change the narrative? And that thought is, watch Romeo kill Juliet. Change the status of that which is already being wrung out.
Very cool thoughts there, Rex, like that. All right. And up next.
Where are we going now?
All right. I'm so glad you asked. Up next we have Some Things That Might or Might Not Be Sincere by Orange Sage. And it goes like this. She changed the title. Okay. Well, she changed the title. And she appeared to have actually changed the poem slightly, too. So, all right, well, let me say this again. Huh? What the heck? That is. I must have accidentally, okay, there we go. Sorry. One of my fingers accidentally clicked on a link to one of her other poems, and I didn't notice. Okay, now I'm back to the actual poem. So, this is Some Things That Might or Might Not Be Sincere by Orange Sage, and it goes like this. Gigantic platters of honey joys, pigs selling bacon sandwiches, wombats in safari suits delivering mail, letters in pink envelopes, dictionaries with missing pages, rustling noise in tall bending grass, dogs with wagging tails, the claws on that smiling cat, thornless rose bushes, self-propelled gnomes, night owls in sunglasses, black feathered birds, long-nosed masks, blood-red, long toenails, sincerity itself, and eyes, metallic pewter, in the hungry, warm-scented, irritant, steel-edged night. End poem. That one was really clever. I like some of that. A lot of it, actually.
Yeah, and hits on that notion of beware of the person who's selling you the shit bag you're now holding, because it may hold something you don't ever want to know what's in your next shit sandwich. Because it hits on pigs selling bacon sandwiches. There's that notion of being sold. Hitting on that notion of you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, so to speak. The wombats and safari suits delivering mail. They're touches of joy and sarcasm, but they're all melded into the thought of you don't know what you're getting, and you best beware of that which is. Dogs with wagging tails, and there's that notion of the tail that wags the dog, the thought that hits political arenas, the claws on that smiling cat. Yes, she might be delivering unto something ripping. Thornless rose bushes, you know what? You can't have a rose without a little bit of blood shed to take that rose to begin with. Warm-scented, irradiant, steel-edged knife. I like that thought. And it being hungry. But the thought of everything else in between kind of hits on that notion of, yeah, beware that which comes blind to you in the moment, or you look at blindly and take as is, as opposed to actually finding out what it's all about to begin with, because it's not real.
I like that, those thoughts. And yeah, you're right. It does really have that tone of, beware of, what you think you're getting. It may not be that. I like that the claws on that smiling cat and the emphasis of, and drawing out of that, representing the Cheshire cat. And there was like the wagging tail had that reference to the propaganda of war, I believe, is what it's referencing. And to me, there was a humor in this. It was a wonderful, dark, twisted humor, because the imagery is so ridiculous. Wombats and safari suits delivering mail, dictionaries with missing pages. And the dictionaries with missing pages, I thought, was particularly impactful in the idea that oftentimes, in order to control a civilization, a population of people, what will be held back is knowledge. And so I thought this was just
not the knowledge,
strong...
you change the definition of the word.
Ah, there you go. That's a really good point. Yep.
The
knowledge.
It used to be that vaccines were what you were given that prevented you from actually getting the disease. It was a vaccine against a particular thought. Now, vaccines, the current definition is to aid in delivery of such goods as to help you combat a particular disease.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really good point there. And, yeah, but I did find that line, like I said, very impactful, very strong, really grabbed my attention. And I really like how she throws in there sincerity itself, like the idea that you have to question sincerity. And unfortunately and sadly in these times, you truly do. So just a real strong emotional impact there. And very well done. And we have two rites, but I don't think I want to try to rush through either one of them. And they're by Litt and Peter Solway, and I will bring those over to next week. Read. And let's go ahead and just quickly let people know about some contests going on. So, Rex, what contest do you have running right now?
A line contest for next Tuesday. That's the only thing I've got open at the moment. I got to put up Valentine's Day tomorrow. Well, go off a Sunday show for Valentine's Day, but day before Valentine's Day. That would be one.
Oh, very cool.
Music. Table.
I like it. And I have to say, I have seen the lines for your contest for next week After Midnight, and I'm hoping and I want people to check out that contest because I tell you, when it comes to food for thought, your chosen prompts offer up a 5-course meal. So check that. Make sure everyone you check that out. I have 3 contests open. One for this week's Art of Seduction, Absinthe Makes the Heart Grow Fonder, which is inspired by absinthe art and quotes. Into the Darkness, Katha Kollwitz, featuring her art and quotes. And Twisted Tuesday, but this is for the 22nd, but I put it up early because it's a Tell Us a Story contest where I offer up art from 2 different artists. You have to choose 1 piece of art from each artist and create a story. So I'm really looking forward to reading people. And, of course, join us later tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And awesome show tonight, Rex.
Yep. Yes, it was. Great show, Pam. Thank you for sitting in, Robbie. Much appreciated. And we'll do this again come next Tuesday morning.
Sounds good. Have a good night.
Good night.